Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to this wonderful Between Takes episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. I am here at Sundance hanging out and being a super cool kid. Decide which part of that is true and which part is not. I'll leave it up to you. But I'm super thrilled to have two members of the Lessons from the Screenplay team here with me right now. We have my dear friend, Trisha Arand.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, and my new best friend, Alex Calleros, whose name I promised I would pronounce correctly. How did I do?
You did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you both. I appreciate you two coming out here.
It is very...
To my own condo.
To your own condo,
Thank
yeah.
you very much.
It's a big thing for all of us.
It is cold outside, so it was a bit of an ordeal.
It is, yeah. And this is, I mean, Trisha, this is your first Sundance.
Yes.
Alex, this is your second Sundance, and this is my first Sundance. How are we feeling so far, Trisha, as far as your inaugural experience? And Alex, how does this compare?
It has been amazing. I basically had no expectations going in. I have just been blown away by the density of not just the town, but like the actual people in the business that are congregating here, that are excited about film. I've heard the Sundance effect like be described, where you see a movie at Sundance, you're like, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen.
Right.
Which you would absolutely not think if you know you saw it outside of that. But the energy is so palpable and so concentrated.
Yeah.
And everyone is so hyped about every film that's here. And so even though it's extremely cold and crowded and kind of insane all the time, it's just thrilling. It's like an amazing experience.
It's really cool, because I found out the first time I came here as well that most of the films I saw, even if they weren't 100% my cup of tea, I really appreciated them in a way that I think if I was watching at home on Netflix, I might have been like, eh, whatever.
Oh, I totally agree.
And it really shows you how much an audience,
yes,
the energy of an audience affects your viewing experience, because people here are really here to appreciate the films, and the energy of that kind of reverberates through you. And like, I just saw a really powerful documentary, which we can talk about, and I felt like my emotional experience was hyped up because I could feel everybody around me having the same experience.
Well, and it's crazy to sit in a movie theater, which is so packed that people are standing outside, like, hoping
Desperate. And praying
they're gonna get in.
And like, for indie films, not for, like, a Marvel movie, you know?
And you know for a fact that, like, the stars and the filmmakers are in the theater.
I think that's part of it, too.
Yeah.
There's a sense, like you were saying, there are movies that you could see at a festival like Sundance, and you might not have loved it as much if you'd seen it on your own, but because it's like this whole celebratory thing, the filmmakers are in the audience, so there's this kind of added pressure of like, I want to make sure they know that I'm supporting them, even if I don't love this. But I think just the energy and the hype and enthusiasm of everyone being here to celebrate films, and to celebrate, like you said, these are like small indie films, and not like, I mean, as much as I love Star Wars and as much as I love the big budget stuff, some of the big budget stuff, it is like a celebration of the art form and kind of like preserving that. So it's very exciting.
I can't imagine what it would take to get like a really bad reaction at some, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, right.
Like, because everything that I've seen, you know, some of it I liked more than others, but it was still just like everyone's applauding, everyone's thrilled.
Well,
so
don't, do you,
in order to piss the audience off that much, you must make, I have no idea what it would be.
Well, there are you read about like, oh, walkouts at Sundance, walkouts at
Cannes.
So it's like, when's that going to happen? When am I going to see people start walking out?
It's probably when a movie is really pushing the limits of something where it's almost just, I personally do not want to expose myself to this movie any longer. And there are the midnight showings. You know, there's a whole category of movie that's just called midnight, I think, right?
Yeah, exactly.
A little more.
And those are the more edgy. You know, there's one that's by David Cronenberg's son.
Yeah, I've heard
which,
of
it. Like, just the thumbnail for it looked really disturbing. I think it's called Possessor. But yeah, I find that at Sundance, there's also just this feeling of, the day is so packed because there's so many films showing all at once across all these different theaters. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of scrambling to get whatever you can.
Yeah.
You're getting on wait lists. And so when you finally get to your movie, you kind of worked for it. And
and
it's kind of like, wow, I feel so grateful that I got into the Sundance screening. And so that's another way that it feels more special. It's like, this movie may not come out until June or
even later.
But or now, like Oscar season.
Yeah.
But you feel like you're in the know about
but
it.
But I get
like
to,
this movie that's coming out that no one else has gotten to see outside of this experience, and I get to kind of be the hype person for it.
Absolutely. And then when the movie is really good and it finishes, and then you get to see the filmmakers come up and like you know, I'm a filmmaker, and I have like a empathy with them of like, wow, how special would this be to finally show your movie to an audience for the first time ever, get this warm reaction and have that feeling. You know, it's just a really special thing, and it's hard to replicate it outside of this kind of festival experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to a few world premieres, and those are the ones where you're like, so I went to The Glorias yesterday, which is Julie Taymor's new movie about Gloria Steinem, and the energy was crazy. It was in, I think, the largest theater here. So it was like in a 1,200.
Which one is
Eccles?
That? Okay.
Yeah,
Eccles. I haven't been to Eccles yet.
It's like a 1,200 seat theater. Okay, it's enormous. It's and Julie Taymor walked out on stage right before the movie came on. She's like, we finished this movie on Monday. and she's like, literally, we've shown it to no one.
Yeah.
And so that was, it was that part of the experience where we were just like, it's that feeling of like, if I tweeted about this right now or whatever, I would be the first person, right?
Like, yes.
It's crazy to think that about a piece of media with it being so, most media being so overly accessible almost today. So, and then of course, at this particular screening, Gloria Steinem walked out after the movie stage, and like we had already been weeping through the whole thing because it's so inspirational. And then she just came out and was answering questions with Julie Taymor. It's that whole component of it is just wild.
It's super surreal.
Well, the surprise guest is also kind of a Sundance staple. I noticed a lot when last time I was here, you'd see a movie and you're like, oh, Ewan McGregor's not going to be here.
Yeah,
like, but this is like a later, you know, they've already premiered it, so they're not going to stick around. And then Ewan McGregor will come out.
He repels like, down. He's got a lightsaber.
It's like, what?
He's just swinging it around.
He came to my screening of this? How special. But, you know, and then on the documentary side, it can be really emotional when they have the Q&A afterwards, because often the subjects of the documentaries have come to Sundance.
Yeah.
And so, for example, I just came from a screening of Welcome to Chechnya, which is an HBO documentary coming out in June. And man, I think it's a must see because.
What's it about?
So basically, it's about how in the region of Chechnya in southern Russia, there's basically this kind of like, you know, Putin pawn, like strong man in charge of the region. And this kind of cascade of events has led to them basically routinely rounding up, torturing, and executing LGBT people. And like,
horrifying.
In almost. Like it's getting to like genocidal thing where they're fleeing, they're trying to get out, they're going to Russia, but Putin doesn't, you know, Putin is also anti-gay, so they're not really safe in Russia either. And you know, this is like Russia, Chechnya. It's like there's these thuggish kind of police forces that will pursue you, will threaten your family, will threaten to kill your sister's kids. Like,
oh my God.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And so it's a really inspiring story. It was very disturbing and shocking, but also very inspiring and beautiful of these like organizations in Russia trying to smuggle them out and get them to like Europe and Canada. Mm. And of course, the U.S. isn't really taking any visas right now under the Trump administration.
Ah.
Well, you saw one as well.
I saw an amazing documentary. Yeah. So a friend of mine was an executive producer on Us Kids, which I'm sure will be widely released soon. It has to be. But it's a documentary about, not really about the Parkland shooting, but more about what happened with the Parkland students immediately afterwards.
Right.
Which is something we all know because it's in the media still and it's happening now. The film focuses largely, though, on their movement in 2018 and how they went, like, got on a bus and, like, drove across the country and were, like, encouraging young people to vote and all of that stuff. And then they did the March for Our Lives and all of that amazing work that they were doing. The film is also so humanizing, where like, you know, oftentimes in the media, this group of young people has just been like one little sound snippet, right? Or just like a little quote or whatever.
They're kind of paraded out on stage.
Exactly.
And they're like, say your thing. And then...
But the film is so much about their own like trauma too, and how in doing all of this work, they're also sort of continuing to put themselves through trauma and expose their trauma in order to try to create, you know, something else and make a change. So inspiring. Again, everybody was just not a dry eye in the house. The audience stood up and cheered for almost 10 minutes after it was done. And then the Parkland students walked out on stage,
which was wild. Yeah, yeah.
It was just so inspirational and like amazingly well done. I mean, incredibly produced. Like, I remember when my friend who was the EP on it, Katie McNeil, went down to Florida and she was down there for however long. So yeah, that one I'm sure everyone will get to see really soon. It's called Us Kids. It's just It's phenomenal.
I haven't gotten to see any documentaries. Does that make me a terrible person?
Well, you know, I would say, you know, I often come to Sundance.
I would say yes.
I often come to Sundance really excited for a couple of the, you know, the bigger name, you know, not really even indie films that have like A-list stars in them. Sure. Like, oh, I'm going to see that premiere. But then oftentimes my most powerful experiences end up being documentaries at Sundance. And there's so many good documentaries being made right now. And the, you know, the best of them are coming out at Sundance. Mm-hmm. One last thing I'll say about Welcome to Chechnya, we had the similar experience where at the end of the movie, like the director and producer come up, you're like, okay, it'll be a Q&A with them. And then like these people who are the stars of the movie who are like also like fleeing for their lives.
Yeah. Wow.
And like
that's intense.
And like and you know, the woman and the transgender man who like are basically running this like secret organization to hide them and get them out of the country.
Wow.
Like were injured, like walked on the stage and it was like, whoa, like, and then that's when everybody like stood up and cheered. And
yeah,
it was
that's
like,
amazing.
That's incredible.
It's super powerful after watching this like incredibly traumatic story. Like they're there in person. Yeah.
And the one I'm sure you'll get to see, the doc that I saw that I'm sure everyone will get to see very, very soon is a Netflix documentary about the, journalist Kim Ball, mm-hmm. who was murdered in 2017. By an eccentric inventor aboard a private submarine. It's wild. And that one I saw the first night that I was here. It's really, really well done. It's called Into the Deep.
Okay.
And so that's another one. If you like documentaries, I really want to recommend that one. It's really powerful and just horrifying. But it was definitely one of those things where the director was in the right place at the right time because she was already doing a story on this inventor. Mm. And then this horrifying murder happened. So she started filming with him like 18 months before this happened. So she has, the footage she has is just surreal. Staring right into the face of someone that you know is going to commit this horrifying crime. It's wild.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've only seen two features. So this has been great. So like doing this as press is awesome because it's like you get access to so much and you get to talk to the filmmakers and you actually get to connect with people. But at the same time, trying to do all that and going to red carpets and then trying to actually see the movies is sort of just like, I don't know what's happening. I'm kind of like, I'll do whatever. Yeah. What's that? Okay, great. So I saw Beast. That was the first movie I saw. I saw that Saturday night. And that was very good. It was, they had this kind of like youthful energy because it's following high school students. And they had all the kids there. And one of the kids in the movie is just this like YouTube, not personality, but talent. Like he does skateboarding and stuff and flips. And like, this kid is crazy. And in the movie, he's doing stuff where you're like, is this safe? Is he allowed, this teenager allowed to be, who was watching this poor child?
How did insurance like approve this?
Exactly. But I loved the aesthetic of it and the energy of it and the purity of the performances were so good. And then I ran into Jim Cummings, the writer and director and star of Thunder Road, one
amazing.
Of my favorite movies, who produced Beast. And I ran into him. I'm like, you're Jim Cummings. And he's like, don't ever speak to me ever again. That's no, he is genuinely Jim Cummings. If you ever get an opportunity to see him, this guy is like one of the sweetest people I've ever met. He was like practically like, yeah, come over here and talk to me. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. But him, Tara Ansley, who produced it, I talked to Will Madden, who's one of the stars in it. And the movie walks a very fine line because it's following three very distinctive personalities. You have this very diverse cast. This one boy who is the crazy skateboarder. You're following this girl who's like in theater, and then you're following this like guy who's like a gun aficionado and very obsessed with it. And the movie is trying to do a whole lot of things. It's not always successful, but the sincerity of, is that?
Sincerity.
I can't even talk. We're all in the position of needing coffee and dying, so just please bear with it. But what Danny Madden's trying to pull off, I like appreciate his attempt to pull all these threads together. All the performances are great, but especially the guy, who, his brother, the director's brother, Will Madden. It's there in the writing, but his performance, Will's performance is so strong. And then I saw The Climb last night, and that was just fun. It's like a weird twist on a bromance. I don't even want to tell you fully what it's about.
Okay.
I'll tell you just the pitch is basically on the eve of this guy's wedding, these two best friends, the groom-to-be finds out that his wife has slept with his best friend. His best friend basically tells him like, oh, hey, by the way, while they're biking, that he's like, I slept with your wife, sorry, or your fiance.
Yeah.
And the movie is so sincere, so funny, and does this very interesting examination of bromances in general.
Uh-huh.
And I always love it, but it dissects it in a way that's very fresh and feels very, it was not at all what I expected. I went into it expecting one thing and got something like almost better in a way than what I was hoping for. Very funny and really impressive. It's this guy's debut, and he films every scene is shot in like a single take, but in a way that doesn't feel showy. It feels very natural. And there were points where I kept forgetting I was watching like a single shot.
Whoa.
The way he stages it and the energy of the way he stages it
is
very character and story driven. It was very impressive.
We've talked a lot about that on our podcast recently, about long takes and you know, when are they useful and actually like serving the
material,
the experience of the material, and when are they kind of doing that showy thing where you're actually taken out of the movie by like, oh wow, look at how like long takey it is.
I would encourage everyone to see this movie for a prime example. And this is, it's his first feature. Like he'd made a short.
I love, by the way, when Sundance premieres, you know, first features. Because
so great.
So often it's like, oh yeah, well this is like already a really established director. Like cool, it's premiering at Sundance, but like he doesn't need to premiere at Sundance.
Yeah.
He basically, he made the short with his best friend. These two guys, they co-wrote it and then he directed it. And they made the short and then they expanded it to a feature and they brought it back. It's not in competition. They were just like, we premiered it at Cannes. We had such a great experience with Sundance that we wanted to bring it back here again.
That's awesome.
But I would encourage everyone, this is a prime example of like, you would think like, oh yeah, first time feature director wants to do everything in one take. It's probably, the guy is out the gate with such confidence, and the way he pulls it off is really impressive. It is a really great example of how to do it. I haven't seen 1917. I know a lot of people are crapping on that movie because it's like, it's all about that. But like, this movie is a really great example of doing it, but without Roger Deakins being. So it's like,
without Roger Deakins.
Yes, exactly.
Considerable disadvantage.
Yeah. But that's like, I'm like, I've only seen these two films so far. And I've only been here for a couple days. And I'm hoping to see more during the week as things.
I'm sure it'll be easier and easier.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're both staying through Saturday, right?
And so we'll have plenty of time.
It gets a lot easier later in the week because people start going back to LA and, you know, it gets less crowded.
Yeah, the first weekend, as I understand, is just super crazy. And so it's we've just come through that. And it's like Monday afternoon right now when we're recording this. So I'm going to be here just for one more day. But I'm excited already to like, I'm going to see another one tonight.
What are you seeing tonight?
I'm going to try to go see a block of shorts tonight, which I'm really excited about. Because I feel like Sundance is one of those festivals where it's possible for a short to really make a splash and to really do something for like potentially a new filmmaker's career. And as we've seen many times over, we see that happen here where it often is just doesn't happen anywhere else because the festival itself doesn't have like the resources or weight or attendance for that to actually be a thing. And so that I'm excited to like go to the shorts block and see what new cool filmmakers I'm going to probably get to see features from in the future, which is, that's like a cool idea.
That's something that I am kind of bummed hasn't been a priority for me. Cause it's like, I feel the same way. I want to go see these movies and start to see, cause that's where a lot of like the upcoming talent is they're making these shorts and then they're coming back just like with The Climb. They're coming back with a feature that, is
exactly
really exciting. And oh, it's so hard. There's so much to do.
Like, you can't. Yeah. You just can't do it.
You have to just kind of pick and choose.
Yeah. It's frustrating because, there's so much happening simultaneously each day. There's a lot of stress, actually, around planning your day. I'm like, I want to go to this event or this movie or,
Or, like, which of these panels can I get into? Or, like, what of these parties should I, like, stop
and
at?
And it's not clear sometimes, like, what can I get into with just a credential? What do I need to be, like, on a special list for? And how do I get on a special list for that? There's a lot of insidery stuff that is hard to navigate at Sundance, but that's just, you know,
that's just how it
Hollywood
is.
Stuff.
So what else are you hoping to see while you're here?
Let's see. Well, today I saw one of the ones I was really excited to see. I saw Wendy this morning, which, if you don't know, is a modern reimagining of Peter Pan's story.
Okay.
By the director of Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, which I was just really excited to see his new feature. And I'm a huge Peter Pan fan. I've seen every adaptation of it. And so I was really, really excited to see this. And it's just lovely. Like, it's just so lovely. It's got all these young, young kids in it. And they're tremendous. Like, the director of Beasts of the Southern Wild, Ben Zeitlin, I think is how we say his name. But he just obviously has such an amazing gift for working with young actors. And the performances he got out of these kids They're amazing.
Is this his first movie since Beasts of the Southern Wild?
Yeah, it's been a long hiatus.
Yeah, right?
It's like a decade.
I know.
I wanted to see more from him after Beasts of the Southern Wild, but I'm not sure what the story is, but there's been a long hiatus, and I'm happy he's,
now
back.
He's back.
Yeah,
maybe he's pulling a Terrence Malick.
He co-wrote this movie. He adapted it, obviously, from the original novel with his sister, and so they both got up, and they were talking about how just they, you know, when they were first started filmmaking, as it is for all of us, they experienced like such euphoria, right? Or just like, there's sort of this like utopic, like sense of play and creation. And it's just like this lovely experience of getting to like play. And then, you know, they were saying like, they saw what happened to Quvenzhané Wallace, not like anything terrible, but once Beasts of the Southern Wild came out and she was like a huge star and she was 6 years old. And then like, you know, as they were watching, they've stayed friends with her and like watching her grow up and be, you know, an even bigger sort of star. They were saying like, they kind of felt similar, like sort of growing pains where they didn't get to like play in the way that they used to. And so they wanted to do something else where they could just like take a pretty small budget, go back, work with children. They went, of course, shot a lot in their home state, which is Louisiana near New Orleans. But yeah, it's just, it's really, really clever, interesting, grounded, but like still really magical reimagining of that story. That was one of the ones I was most excited to see. Cross all of our fingers. We're going to try to go see Tesla tonight.
Ooh, Tesla.
At the very least, trying to hit up that red carpet.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Trying to say, hey, Ethan. And just look at, and he'll know. We'll look at him and he'll be like, I know. He'll be like, White Fang, right? Can you please tell, Trisha, can you please tell the White Fang story?
Yes, okay. So I yesterday went to the wrong movie theater for something that I was trying to go see. It's very embarrassing. It's sort of a classic new Sundance thing. I think it's a rite of passage. Definitely just walked to the wrong theater and then totally missed my screening. But so I was sitting in this cafe. And the cafe is at the public library, and there's a theater down there at the public library as well in Park City. And a few of the employees there are clearly like sort of special needs or like, you know, you can just tell that like this is their place of business and there's lots of community support around this like cafe.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there charging my phone and Ethan Hawke walks in, and there were not very many people in this cafe at all. And the minute he set foot inside, two of the employees just shouted White Fang at him. They were like, White Fang! And he just walks up to them and he throws his arms around them and was like, you guys saw White Fang? As though, I don't know. Like,
I've never seen this movie.
I've never seen it.
This you haven't seen
missing
it?
Frame. Let's do it.
Oh my God. Okay, so yeah, White Fang is the movie Ethan Hawke basically made in the early 90s when he was a teenager. That's based on the Jack London novel. Anyway, and he was like, you guys saw White Fang? You liked it? And they were like, we love it. He's like, I loved working on White Fang because I got to work with these wolves. And they're such amazing animals. And like everyone around had just melted into a puddle of how adorable what was happening.
This interaction was.
Yes, it was so cute. And then, and so, you know, friends of the employees started snapping photos of them with Ethan and they were just thrilled. And then, you know, Ethan was on his way to a movie and so he goes to leave and someone just from the crowd shouts like, hey, Ethan, are you having a good time? And he just stops and he goes, are you kidding me? This is just the best. Like, his expression of just like, we're at Sundance. This is the best place we could be.
I love it.
It's so wholesome. Like, it was just
like, there's a scary part where he says, you know, like, are you kidding me? Like, fuck off, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, no. Like, this is the best thing ever, you guys.
Yeah. That's also part of the amazingness of this experience.
Yeah.
Like with Ethan, like with Jim and everyone who worked on Beast and all these amazing producers and writers and talent, you get to meet these people and humanize them in a way you don't often get to when you're admiring from afar.
Yeah.
And getting that affirmation to see, like, this person I admire, who I hope is, like...
We're all just people.
I hope they're as wonderful as I would think they are. They are, and they're... Yeah, I love it.
I've seen quite a few other celebrities, and it's almost always just, like, passing them on the street kind of
thing. We're all packed into this, like, very small corridor, you know, Main Street, and so... It's not like LA where you're all spread out in your separate neighborhoods. We're just all in one small, tiny
one
place.
One street, yes.
And so many people from Hollywood are here. And,
I saw Toni Collette. I walked by her.
I saw her too.
What's her name? Camilla, I can't remember her last, from Riverdale. She plays Veronica in Riverdale.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I don't remember this guy's name, but the guy who plays Kevin Tran in Supernatural, who's like a fan favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
And Supernatural is just a wonderful show.
One of my favorite celebrities that I spotted was Viggo Mortensen.
I walked right by him. Like, as soon as I got off the like the bus to get to Sundance, like, he walked by me. I'm like, I'm here.
Trisha has another one. Yeah,
very similar. I'm at standing at the baggage claim at Salt Lake City, and I look, like, literally right next to me, I look over, and it's Ben Whishaw. That's just in there, who I love so much. And
he's Paddington. How can you not love Paddington?
Right?
Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, Mary Poppins Returns, and of course... James Bond films.
Yep. Yeah.
But yeah, it's amazing to me how, like, we get this a little bit in LA, where if you see someone from the corner of your eye, your brain, it's funny how instantly recognizable celebrities are, even when you don't get a really good look at them, or they're, you know, bundled in like 20 degree weather clothes or whatever. And your brain immediately goes like, oh, that's so-and-so. And then you do the second guess thing where, like, obviously it can't be, but it definitely is. Yeah.
That's happening all the time.
It happens constantly, like, where your brain's like, and that, as well as, I definitely know that person. No. I can't place what I know them from, or, yeah, that kind of thing. Or have I just seen them 8 times around Park City?
Right.
Yeah.
That experience as well.
I walked by Jesse Williams, who I first saw on Grey's Anatomy. Mm-hmm. But he has these, like, very piercing blue eyes, and they are that way in real life. And so I was walking by, I'm like, who is this person? Whoa, his eyes are, like, piercing through me. Oh, it's that guy.
That's how I feel.
Sometimes celebrities in real life are just like, they have, like, the star energy.
Yes.
They're actually much more gorgeous in real life, in my experience. It's like, as pretty as you think that actor is or whatever, they're that much more beautiful in real life. Right. I saw Elizabeth Moss on the street, which nearly killed me. But just radiant. And I heard her say, like, 3 words to the person she was with. And I was like, that's how Elizabeth Moss sounds. Like, the voice is just as recognizable as anything else.
It's a real Elizabeth Moss.
out in the wild. Moth and Moss. All out.
Retired.
Yes. Yeah. So, Alex, what other movies are you looking forward to?
I have some on my calendar for tomorrow that I want to see. Let me remember what they are. Horse Girl, I want to check out.
I
love the Duplass brothers and everything they're doing with indie film. And their kind of ethos of just trying to support, you know, just interesting, quirky stories. I appreciate
their niche.
Did they
do Jeff Who Lives at Home?
I think so. Okay. That's kind of in their wheelhouse.
Yes.
Yeah. If it wasn't them, it's their kind of movie. Yeah.
Okay.
But I saw the trailer for Horse Girl, and I you know, didn't really know what to make of it at first, but it kind of got more and more surreal and bizarre by the end of the trailer, so now I'm really excited. It's kind of maybe about UFO abductions, or maybe she's crazy. So that one I'm looking forward to. I'm also seeing The Social Dilemma tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
And that, I mean, so it's probably nothing that I don't already know about how social media is destroying everything, but if there's a really good doc about it, then I'm sure I'll enjoy that. One thing I do want to say too is that besides going to films here, part of the reason I even decided to come out to Sundance is because of this burgeoning group of documentary editors who have kind of banded together in, like, a volunteer-led kind of pseudo-union where we're organizing online and basically just, like, creating a community because, you know, a lot of times in the indie film world, it's non-union work. It's you don't really have the community in post-production. You're just by yourself at a computer. Mm-hmm. So you don't really, you know, have a support system around you. And so it's been really awesome to see this, like, independent documentary community come together.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're throwing events. We're going to have a little mixer with producers tonight. We are going to have, like, other just ways to, you know, meet other people in the doc community, get work. And it's just cool that Sundance provides those spaces as well. You know, it's not just for movies.
Much.
It's also for, like, the larger film community, the independent community to come together and, like, you know, further our careers.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think the 40-year-old version is, like, my hill to die on this year, because that was the first thing I tried to see and I couldn't get in. Then I tried to go to the press and industry screening and I couldn't get into that. So now it's like, all right, I have to see this.
You have to see it.
This is Rada Blank. And it's, like, very, like, there's a lot of buzz around it. And I love, it's just, I'm going to get the details wrong, but it's basically a woman in her 40s who has been, like, trying to make it as a theater director or as an actor, and she kind of rediscovers her love of rapping. So she starts to go back into her rap career, trying to make her rap career work, and then finding the balance between these
two lives.
I just love the concept of it. And I got to talk to all the actors on the red carpet, and it was just so wonderful, like, to talk to all of them. And they're all, like, some of them have been working for a little while, but it's clear that for most of them, this is, like, a big event. Like, they're not used to going to Sundance. They're not used to being in a movie that people are talking about.
So exciting,
yeah. So to get to talk to all of them, that just made me more excited. And then they're like, are you seeing the movie? And I'm like, I can't. It's everyone's been seeing it except for me. But just seeing that. And I love... It's really cool. They talked a lot about it, but the amount of diversity behind the camera and in front of the camera to hear them talk about it and to be so excited about it is really cool. So that's the movie. I'm like, I've got to try to see this. I really want to see Be Water, the Bruce Lee documentary, the Natalie Wood documentary. Those are a couple I'm hoping to catch.
Yeah, the Natalie Wood doc is what I want to see. What else is going on?
Downhill. I would like to see Downhill with Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. What else? There's so much going on. Tesla, of course.
There's too many. Like,
there's way too many.
I've lost track.
Yeah.
I tried like crazy because, you know, I write mostly historical dramas. So I'm obviously so excited about Tesla for that reason. But then I also tried hard and didn't get in to see Ironbark,
which I'm
really, really sad about. Yeah. So I'm definitely going to try to catch it. I'm hoping it'll be out pretty soon and, maybe not too soon, maybe award season, but I'm really going to try to catch Ironbark as well, which is the Benedict Cumberbatch, like, Cold War spy sort of thing.
Somebody I overheard somebody saying that was, like, by far the best movie they've seen.
I am so bummed I missed it.
Oh, damn. Yeah, I got some work to do the next few days.
So there we go. Who knows? It was a complete stranger, but, you know, I was like, okay. Well somebody liked it.
My first time here, I had, like, maybe 1 or 2 days left of the festival, and I just asked a volunteer, you know, as I was walking between theaters, I was like, hey, what's your favorite movie so far? And she recommended a movie called Encendé. It looks like Incendies in English. But it was a early film at that point. It was 2011 by Denis Villeneuve, who went on to make Prisoners, Blade Runner, all these amazing movies, Arrival. And so I got to, like, be on the ground floor of, like, one of his earlier films. And it was amazing. I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Who is this filmmaker? Because he's making, like... This film feels like a classic movie, the way, like, Children of Men feels like a classic movie being made now. And I was so hoping that he was going to go somewhere, and then he totally did. Yes.
That's been very exciting. Like, it all goes back to what you were saying, Trisha, just about, like, we've all been kind of saying it, but being on the ground floor and getting the opportunity, you never know, but you might accidentally, quote unquote, see something that it's like, oh my God, like, I was not expecting that. And then it also becomes...
Right.
Villeneuve and, like, things like that are wonderful.
Yeah, and it's also just very inspiring because even though, you know, your chances of getting into Sundance are, you know, whatever, 1 in a million or something, it's still to see those stories, to see the early filmmakers who do make it in, who are really deserving of this spotlight. It's very inspiring and makes you want to keep going.
But their chances were 1 in a million too. So it's like, again, it's like they're in the same position and they are finally, like, we did it.
Yeah.
So to feel like you're a part of that celebration, I think, is really special.
I will say, though, as amazing as it has been, and I have absolutely no regrets about any of the way that I've done this, I would do it totally differently. So I'm thinking I would love to come back next year, but I would approach it really differently. Mm-hmm. I kind of made my decision to come at the last minute, and that's part of the reason that, like, I don't have very many tickets, so I'm doing a lot of waitlisting, which honestly has worked well for me, but it is a crapshoot, you know? And so, like, I've been lucky. I was actually number one on a wait list at one point. It's sort of like my accomplishment of the weekend.
You're guaranteed in.
Yeah, exactly. And it was for Us Kids, which was, you know, like I said, I think maybe my favorite thing that I've seen. But, I would just plan it much more in advance. I would, like, think about transportation differently. I would think about, scheduling differently. Like, I haven't gotten to see any panels, and I probably won't at this point. But I know there were some amazing panels I would have loved to go to and things like that. So I would plan it differently. And I would also, like, make sure that whether it's if you just have to spend the money to buy, like, a 10 movie pass, you know, save up your money and probably do it that way. Or, like, whether, you know, you can be press, you know, apply early, get a press tag. Or, like, if you're a filmmaker, you know, whatever you need to do, like, you have a filmmaker badge because of this, the doc editors.
Right, and that's a wonderful thing, too, is that, you know, because Sundance has a documentary film program, they're working with our little burgeoning, you know, alliance.
Yeah.
And we worked together, and they were like, hey, we want to get your editors in and get them credentials. So I, as an editor, I got a credential, even though I don't have a film here, which was so cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I would absolutely, if anyone is thinking of coming, like, recommend planning well in advance and figuring out how it is that you're going to get into those spaces mm-hmm. where you're going to be able to see at least some of the things you want to see, but also that you're going to be able to meet some of the other people that are your peers.
Yeah.
If you are a filmmaker or in any way involved in the industry, whoever your peers are, those are the people you want to meet here, because they're, most of the people that I've met are in New York or Atlanta, or they're in San Francisco, or mm-hmm. they're from, you know, like Australia, whatever that is. And so you're not going to get to meet them very easily somewhere else. But when you're in Park City, you know, this is a tiny town and they are very accessible if you can like find a way to attend the event that is most meaningful to yep. your niche of the industry, whatever that is.
And also just accept the fact that you're not going to be able to do everything.
Yeah.
Kind
Pace
of just
yourself.
Go, like be
just
happy.
Go.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Let go of like the plan. Be also be ready to let go of the plan, which
yeah.
is what I've found I've had to do.
Well, cause yeah, you get stressed out cause you're like, yeah. oh man, I did want to go to this event or this movie and like none of it's working out. And now like the shuttle's not coming soon enough. And when am I going to eat dinner? And you get into like a frenzy and you just have to let go and just be like, I'll just do what I can, let fate guide me. You know, sometimes you meet people in the most random places.
Yep. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Well, what
yeah.
happened with me was I missed the 40-year-old version press and industry screening. I went over to the Filmmakers Lounge and
that's where you met him.
And, well, I met him the night before, but he was there and he came over and was just hanging out. And then he and the film's Beast producer, one of its producers, Ben, they're like, we're going to just a celebration. You want to come? And I was like, okay.
Awesome.
So it was just, but it's just like, just didn't like embrace it and enjoy it and accept that.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
And pace yourself and sleep.
Sleep, please.
Sleep.
Yeah.
One thing no one at this table has done.
Yeah. Yeah, sleep and also like eat. Because like it's actually, it's really hard to find time for meals when you're trying to run around. It's kind of spread out and you have to take these shuttles around. And
yeah.
So yeah, I feel like I've been kind of malnourished with like lots of protein bars.
Everyone's
and
eating
coffee.
Protein bars
yeah,
constantly.
Like free snacks at various lounges.
Well, this has been fantastic. Trisha and Alex, thank you so much. And if the good people at home want to find you, can you tell them about this itty bitty podcast and this itty bitty YouTube channel that you two
sure.
are working with? Yeah.
Yeah. So we both write for Lessons from the Screenplay, which is a video essay channel that breaks down screenwriting and amazing movies. We get to basically like break down things we love about the coolest movies that there are in terms of screenwriting. And then we also have a deep dive that we can do into all of that stuff, which we do on our podcast, which is called Beyond the Screenplay. We also love hearing directly from listeners and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you could also tweet at us too. I'm at Trisha Jean A on Twitter.
I'm at Alex _Calleros on Twitter.
And then follow me at YeShondorman. Talk to me and I'll talk back. Maybe. But this has been great. Thank you both so much. And thank you all for tuning in. Stay tuned for more.